Imagine 5 minute auctioneer going once, going twice, sold to Robert Kraft, $500 million, a football team in New England. All right, anyway.
All right, it is recording now, so I'm going to pause here. You can cut this off very easily. Joe's just an idiot. Joe's just an idiot with all that crap.
It took you fucking 7 episodes to figure that out. You got another thing coming, Jim.
About 5 seconds into meeting you, I figured that out. So
5 seconds into asking you if I hit on a 16 with a 3 show or not.
It also took me 5 seconds to realize Kojak was a fucking giant. I mean, I'm sitting here, yeah. I'm 6 feet tall.
I'm a very large
looking
man.
Up at him. Like, Jesus.
Dude, I was like, I bet Eric's short as fuck. I'm like,
I don't know why I thought that. I really don't.
Dude, I think
I didn't say short as fuck. I said like 5'7", 5'8".
That's short as fuck.
That's no, very not. Short
five,
for a dude.
5'5 is for short as fuck.
For a Max dude, is short as fuck. Short.
All right, we're doxing our friends in their heights.
I don't give a fuck.
That'd be a good test to see if they're listening. Yeah. No, I'll cut that shit out. All we cut out is, Ella.
Hey, hey.
Cut out. All right, start this
over. All right. What's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 7 of Breaking the Plane podcast. I'm your host, Burge. Sitting here again with my co-host, Joe Scher, and our lovely producer, Paul Giant, Kojak. Doesn't want me to use his real name here. Doesn't want me to use his real name, so we're just going to call him Kojak.
Everyone calls me that. My mom Kojak. Calls me Kojak. I'm surprised you say Joe Scher.
It would
I've
be
never
jarring
heard Joe
if Scher I heard
unless
your
it's Bonnie.
Call you
I don't act. I don't actually know like what his official nickname is. I've heard about six
Juju.
Of them.
It's Juju.
I've heard about
J-U,
six of them.
J-U.
Harry Houdini. Like,
Harry Houdini.
I don't know why Harry Houdini stuck more than Juice Wayne. Juice Wayne
Dude,
is
that was so
cooler.
Funny. You changed your Twitter name to Harry Houdini and I was crashed.
Well, you just don't do anything and then you start sending memes to the boys and you're like, hold on, who did you add?
literally. I was like, wait, did you fucking change your name to Harry Houdini?
That's awesome.
That was so funny.
Well, as always, guys, we're brought to you by the lovely folks over with Primetime Productions at Primetime Prods on Twitter, primetimeproductions.net. Be sure to go out, give them a like, a follow, and peruse all their
Shout
content
out Tommy
on their
B
website.
For the engagement. Tommy Bennett, you're the GOAT.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's an awesome guy. Host of a couple of podcasts, loves writing articles. Be sure to check his stuff out and check out everybody else there. Lots of good content for you. How you guys doing? You know, we had our first BTP meetup a couple days ago. How you guys doing? How'd that go?
If I wasn't up 200% at the casino, I don't know if I would have made it home.
Well, I made it home and I was not up 200%, so we can just leave it at that.
Yeah, you could have somersaulted home, brother.
Yeah, yeah. Nice 5-minute drive from my house. It was awesome. Nah, but it was good to finally, you know, put some faces to, well, actually I see you guys out on the recordings every week, but actually nice to actually see you guys in person, find out like I might actually be the shortest one of the group. If not, I'm like very close and I thought I was tall myself, but you know, it was a good time. We got to meet up and hopefully we're going to get to do it again sometime soon.
I know we'll talk about it later, but I got to scream across the bar about a Josh Allen interception to Burge and got a good rise out of him. So that was nice. Boy, do they fucking suck.
Yeah, well,
yo,
we'll talk.
Who's their OC? He should come out. You're not doing anything. Come on the pod, dog.
Yeah, Ken Dorsey, come on.
Ken Dorsey, get the fuck on here.
We're a Buffalo Bashing podcast. We're a Buffalo Bashing podcast. Come in and bash with us.
Yes, dude. Imagine if we had the OC, the Bills being like, yo, no, fuck Jock Allen. He sucks.
Yeah. I'd be in heaven. Awesome. I'd be 6 to midnight the whole time.
We probably have a better shot at getting digs on the podcast talking shit about Josh Allen than we do the old OC.
Did you see his Instagram story?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was real or not, but homeboy wants out.
Yeah. And he's talking to
his brother was tweeting. Yeah, his brother was tweeting.
Damn, him
and you
got to,
dude, you got to think, I don't know. There's no way that I would be, like, I'm an only child, obviously, but, like, there's no way I'm letting my brother or, like, a good friend of mine, like, tweet that shit out. You know what I mean? I'd be like, yo, take that down. Like, that's unprofessional. You know what I mean?
Both,
but that's
they're both
me.
Professional athletes. They're both professional athletes. They know what that repercussions of that is.
Oh,
so, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
No, I agree. Okay, that's the other way you can look at it, too. He definitely knows what's going on there. Same with Trayvon. And he's probably loopy on painkillers because of the knee, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, like Joe said, we'll get into that a little bit later in the podcast. As you all know, we're all very big Patriots fans here on the podcast. The state of Patriots Nation is not well right now. It is not well. We are going through the worst season that I think all of us can really remember since our, you know, adolescence, since our childhood. It's been rough. So we're going to spend a lot of time today talking about the state of the Patriots and what's going on there. Where are we going to go from there in the future? We'll also get to the playoff picture in both conferences, break that down, see if we think that the guys that are sitting in there right now are going to make it in, or if the teams that are in the hunt might overlap some of them. And then, as always, we'll have our lovely picks and locks for you to fade or slam. And
you better be slamming. You better be slamming these picks.
We've had a couple of good weeks in a row here, so be sure to stay tuned for that here later in the episode. But let's get into it. Let's get into it here. I think we've had some testy Twitter conversations here about what's going on with the Patriots. So now it's going to be time to come out here and get it out here on the podcast.
Oh, we're talking Patriots? Hold on. That's me opening a beer.
Yeah, me too. Gotta get the bottoms up. So we'll start off. We'll break down the game that occurred over in Frankfurt, Germany on Sunday morning. Patriots over there taking on the Indianapolis Colts. Patriots lose a game 10-6. That's like a lacrosse score, a baseball score. That's not a football score. It's not.
That's like a low-scoring lacrosse game.
Low-scoring lacrosse game. Absolutely. Yes, you're right. High-scoring baseball game. Just an absolute dumpster fire of a game. I'm ashamed that I actually watched it. Mac Jones did not have himself a really good day. You look at his numbers across the board, they don't look horrible. But if you watch the game and see it all in context as to what happened, he threw 5 incompletions, and those 5 incompletions were some of the worst throws that I think we've seen in a very long time. Gardner Minshew gave Mac Jones a lesson on how to avoid pressure in this game. An effing backup was able to avoid pressure and get out of the pocket, escape, and make throws better than Mac Jones could, who is Captain like a blind Turtle. Dude,
somebody had to drive.
Captain Turtle in this game. As soon as he felt the pressure, either he's tossing it off his back foot or he's just, you know, tucking down and you know, giving up on the play. It was an absolutely pitiful performance to watch him play in this game. I thought the defense played they played well in this game. Anytime you hold an NFL team to 10 points, that's a good performance. You've given your offense a shot to win. And I think if I recall correctly, it was like the first or second drive of the game that Jonathan Taylor ran it into the end zone for the touchdown. And they ended up shutting them down the rest of the way. What a boring game. Joe, I'll give it to you. You can give your thoughts.
Coherent thoughts, I have few. It's getting to a point where it's a job, it's a chore to watch this team. They are my favorite team. Like you said, I'm going to go down with the ship. Am I going to be throwing fucking old ass head coaches overboard and trying to run them over? Yes, I will be. But I will still be going down with the ship. I love this team to the day I die. But holy shit, was that impossible to watch. There's not a single thing that the Patriots did well. There's not a single thing. If you take out Mac Jones's average of 8 yards per scramble, which is who cares, they're averaging 4.3 yards a rush with a long of 10 yards. And then I don't even want to get started on the passing game. The whole thing with the Patriots and the whole thing with this team, how it was supposed to be predicated on, was running the ball, playing defense. They couldn't do either well enough to win the game. And then when you have your quarterback throwing the ball legitimately 12 yards short of a receiver where the open window would be, there's no way you can win this game. This team is built to win one way, and they can't win a single different way. And even the way that they're built to win, they're horrible at it. They let up 10 fucking points. They let up 10 points in a different country. These are the games that preparation and coaching in the Patriot way was supposed to give you a leg up on. This is a team with their second with their backup quarterback, with a running back who was off the reservation for the first 4 games of the season, and an unproven head coach. You fly 12 hours to Europe and you put up 2 field goals. You're 2 for 3 on field goals, and that's your entire offensive performance. 5 sacks, 6 tackles for loss, 11 negative plays. That's horrible. That team might as well not even show up. I couldn't imagine being guys like Christian Gonzalez or Matt Judon who are rehabbing, trying to get back to play for this team. I couldn't imagine that. And now that I think about it, Jack Jones is tweeting and going crazy all the day, all the time in Germany. I think it was a punishment they even took him there. So you have all of this bullshit going on around the team. You don't take JC Jackson. You don't take Trent Brown. The coach is dodgy about all the fucking questions in the media. Then you do. Wait. Oh, Kayla, can you? You gotta be fucking kidding me.
You're good. You're good. Keep going.
What's going on in my
Keep going. Keep going.
I can hear you. You're good.
Keep going.
Dude, I fucking hate this shit, dude. Fuck ESPN. All right, fine. I'm gonna go off on ESPN too. Fuck ESPN. Have you followed them recently on fucking Twitter? All they do is they fucking play ads and they don't load their ads on the fucking thing. So I can't even look at the fucking box score when we do this fucking podcast. Then I go on Twitter and it's like a 12-year-old fucking girl is doing their fucking social media. They have no substance behind any of their writing. They have no substance behind any of their tweets. And now when I come on and do a podcast, try to throw them a bone and use them for the fucking box scores and play some bullshit fucking ad in my ears when I'm trying to do this shit. So fucking annoying. Anyway.
That's happened to me a few times too.
It's so aggravating, dude. So I'm so aggravated. It's like getting kicked in the balls when you're at the DMV, dude. This is the fucking words. I gotta talk about this fucking team, and now I got fucking some bullshit catnip commercial playing in my fucking ears. All right. Dude, so I'm saying, dude, they have all this, like, stuff that's going on. They have the Jack Jones, the J.C. Jackson, the Trent Brown. You have the whole fucking team not believing in Mac Jones. You have the quote-unquote best football mind in the history of the game taking out your starting quarterback on the last drive to give it to a backup quarterback who hasn't run the two-minute drill in probably months since the fucking preseason. So it's like, There's so many things going wrong that, like, dude, the quarterback sucks. The coach is over the hill. The coaching the drain brain and the coaching infrastructure is horrible. The last three drafts have been absolute no-shows besides maybe two or three guys. There's probably three guys in the last three drafts that you can keep on this team and build around. And I think, wait, all three of them are on fucking defense. All three of them are on defense.
Ramondre.
Can you build around a running back? You, sure. Dude, they had the same thing 2 years ago with Damian Harris. He signs for the veteran minimum in Buffalo. It's like, there's no consistency. There's no consistency here with the coaching, with the offensive system, with their general offensive, like, schemes. There's no consistency there. And then when you get on the defensive side of the ball, it's riddled with nepotism. You got Bill Belichick's fucking kids with their hands all over everything. I agree right now they're decimated by injuries, but they're still not as good as they need to be on that side of the ball, especially if you claim to be this mastermind defensive, like, guy. And if you're picking the groceries and coaching, don't you think that you picking the groceries and coaching as a defensive mastermind, defensive players, would be great? And it doesn't make any sense, dude. It doesn't. There's nothing. There's no, like, positives or silver line. Maybe Pop Douglas. Maybe the resurgence of Christian Barmore. But it's like, are they? You don't even know if they're gonna fucking play because of how petty the coach is. It's frustrating, dude. It's like, I mean, now I'm getting sweaty. I gotta stop wearing sweatshirts when we record, but. It's unbelievable, dude. It's so aggravating.
It's a weird day to dump on the Patriots defense, though, and everything.
They gave up 10 points.
They gave up under 300 yards. They gave up.
How do you not win a game giving up 10 points?
I'm just saying, it's a weird day to be dumping on the defense, one that's decimated by injury and has all the BS going on with the quarterbacks.
Still not good enough. Nothing, not a single phase, not a single, from ownership to the front office, to the coaching, to the players on the field, to the actual plays the players are fucking running. Not a single thing is good enough. Not a single fucking thing is good enough. Not a single thing. Nothing. You can't even point to a fucking position group that's performing above what it should be. You can't find a single part of the team. It's mind blowing that the team is in this situation. I'm sorry. I'm going off and derailing the whole thing, but
It's a bummer that Christian Gonzalez got hurt, because I think that cornerback room would be one that would be kind of that overachieving kind of place, having him out there on the field. Same with Marcus Jones. They don't lose him. It's kind of the same thing. You got enough depth back there where I think that group would have been one that could have been like, hey, we're going to be that positional group that's going to be like the best one of the entire team. I do agree with you. All the position groups right now have been either mediocre or atrocious throughout the entire season. I'm sorry. I got no problem with them sitting down Mac Jones to go in there to let Zappe go out there and run that final drive. Obviously, the team is not making the playoffs. They're obviously, I think, looking towards next year in every facet, from coaching, from ownership, from front, everywhere, is looking towards next year. I wish it was Will Grier that had that shot, not Bailey Zappe, because we know what Bailey Zappe is. He blows. He's awful. All right. This team has no quarterback. The two quarterbacks that have been dressing every week blow. That interception that Mac Jones threw in the, we'll call it the end zone, but we'll call it like the 3-yard line where he threw it. Dude, he felt the pressure there and would not stand in and take the effing hit. He stands in there and drives that ball and actually puts everything in, his mechanics are correct on that throw. That's an easy touchdown. Mike Gesicki was 5 yards beyond his receiver.
And the thing is like, dude, the guy didn't even have the lineman beat. He just pushed him back into the backfield. There was still an offensive lineman between Mac and the defender, which makes it even more egregious, which makes what you're saying even easier to point out, is because, dude, it doesn't even need to be a free runner. It doesn't even need to be a guy beating a block. It just needs to be a guy moving the pocket in a certain way. And he literally turtles. You're right.
It's awful. It was, I saw that pass. I'm like, dude. And then as soon as they benched him for that, I'm like, that better be the end. I better not see him play another snap this year. I don't even care if they have to roll Bailey Zappe out there for the next 8 games. That's not going to be the guy I want to see play, but I don't want to see any more Mac. If what the reports are saying, and he's lost the locker room, this has been his MO this year. He's driven the team down the field in these moments where they're coming back. They've been coming back a lot, and they've been in position to win or at least tie a game in the last 2-3 minutes of the game. Every single time he makes one of these mistakes, it seems like. And it's like, dude, what happened? Like, I know, like, we can, again, we may be even getting into this in a little bit, but like, you could say it's the coaching that derailed him. You can say that he wasn't as billed, you know, as he was billed for this team, which was on his intangibles and his mind. And I was on a podcast, I think I told you guys before, and I was on it during the 2021 draft when the Patriots took Mac Jones. And we had a debate on which were these 5 first round quarterbacks were going to be the biggest bust. All right, we were split on it. I was a Trey Lance. I was on the Trey Lance bandwagon, and the other two guys were on Mac Jones, that he was going to be the bust. And let's be honest, those two were the two worst ones right now out of the entire class.
Zach Wilson. I would rather have Mac Jones than Justin Fields.
I don't know about that.
In a good situation, you'd rather have Mac Jones.
Maybe, yeah, because
if you were the 49ers, you'd rather have Mac Jones.
Okay, that's fair, but that's a team that plays anybody in their system and they have success.
Agreed. That's why Mac Jones would be good.
Okay. All right. Well, we can agree with that, but
you're completely right. What you say is his mistake. The thing about Mac Jones is the mistakes aren't cumulative, right? It's not like he's making a lot of mistakes. It's not like he has the opportunity to make a lot of mistakes, but the mistakes he does make are backbreaking, taking sacks deep in the red zone to force field goals instead of touchdowns. That's an automatic 3-point, 4-point swing. You're throwing interceptions when you're driving to go score the winning points of the games. That's happened multiple times. You're throwing backbreaking interceptions when you're deep in your territory at halftime, early in the game to go down 14-0 instead of 7-0. And as Patriots fans and people who watch this team religiously, we know that as soon as it's, dude, sometimes when another team kicks a field goal to go up 3-0, I'm like, it's fucking over. It's fucking over. And it stinks because, like, the first drive of the game, dude, they were running the ball down the Colts' throat, running it down their throat. They get to a third and short deep in the red zone. Mac takes a sack. And now it's like, all right, Mac gets the blame. I understand. You can't take a fucking sack there. You can't take a sack. You got to at least try to make a play. You're 2-7. You got to make a play. But on second thought, it's like, how much culpability do you give to the fucking guy who puts the play in, dude? You're running the ball, dude. You're averaging, even though, like, averaging 4.1 yards a carry, like our reference at the beginning, that's not, like, that's good, right? That's standard. You want to get close to 5, like over 4.5, 5 is where you want to be.
Well, but 4.5 gets you ahead of the chains.
Exactly. So, like, you're at the beginning of that drive, dude. You have beginning of that drive, you have Zeke and Ramondre Stevenson absolutely gashing the Colts. You get down to 3rd-and-3 in the fucking red zone and you run the ball. I mean, you don't run the ball, dude. Even even you could talk me into that being a four down situation, which makes you running the ball even a more of a fucking better option, dude. You run the ball, power run two times in a row. You're going to get fucking 3 yards after you're busting off 5-6 yards of carry earlier in the drive. It's just Mac is definitely culpable in his demise. I don't think he's the guy. I don't think he ever has been. I think it was a little bit of fool's gold, but it's almost like you keep, I think you would be harder to find a quarterback that would succeed in the system than you think. I don't think there's a single quarterback in the league right now outside of maybe Patrick Mahomes that, excuse me, that can make this work. Maybe Joe Burrow, but like we're talking generational talents. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We're not talking top five guys. We're not talking top 10 guys. We're talking generational talents would be needed to make this team work, which gives credence to the last 20 years of it being way more about Tom than Bill.
Well, I'll just say this, and I haven't seen the all 22 footage or anything, but I've noticed a lot of times that Mac is killing the play that's called at the line of scrimmage. And once he does that, the play is either a sack or a run into the line. So, like, he's clearly not reading right. And in this game, there was one particular one where he killed it. And I can't remember if it was the run where the guy got stuffed or if it was where he took a sack or he was forced to make a bad throw. But Bill O'Brien was lighting him up on the sidelines. I'm sure you guys saw that all over Twitter. But he was lighting him up, kind of like it reminded me of when Bill O'Brien was lighting up Tom Brady that one time back in 2010 with I think it was Tyquan Underwood in the end zone. Brady overthrew him and they were bickering back and forth. And, you know, Bill O'Brien is a competent coach. He's proven himself in the college ranks and he's proven himself at the NFL level. Yeah, he hasn't made it to a Super Bowl, but what he did with some of those Houston teams before Deshaun Watson showed up was pretty good with like TJ Yates and Case Keenum as his quarterback getting to the playoffs. So like I'd be curious to see, looking at like the footage, how many of those bad sacks or those bad run plays that were there were Mac checking out of the play that was called. Because we've seen Mac have his issues with the coaching over the last couple of years. You see his facial expressions, his body language. You've seen that negative energy that he brings and obviously not liking what's being called in. And when he goes and makes a decision to change it, it falls on its face. So again, I haven't seen it, so I can't really point to anything in particular other than that one incident, but it's just one of those things, dude. Like I'm sick and tired of watching this dude. I'm sick and tired of watching him. I don't care who the next guy is that they put in there. I don't care.
You want to see Malik?
I'll see Malik. I will see Malik Cunningham over Bailey Zappe and Mac Jones all day.
Why, dude, you have Malik Cunningham. You sign him to a contract. You release him, and then you put him back on the practice squad. He's been practicing exclusively as a wide receiver. Why don't you start Greer, have Bailey Zappe as a backup, dress Malik Cunningham as a wide receiver, and have a sub package just like the fucking Saints do for Taysom Hill? It's like, why do we, like, I feel like sometimes some shit's so obvious with the team that, like, they're almost, like, purposely going the other way.
Well, don't you want them to be purposely going the other way right now?
They're 2-8. From Mac, yes, but not from the obvious consent of opinion.
They're 2-8 right now, so you kind of want them to lose at this point. They're obviously not going to make the playoffs. Even if they went out, they're not making the playoffs.
And that's why I want them to keep Bill. You keep Bill, you keep Mac, or you keep Bill and you keep this quarterback situation, and you're going to get a top three pick.
Dude, if they fired Bill right now, they're still going to get the top three pick. Are you kidding me? They fire Bill now. You fire Bill right now, and let's just say they promote Mayo for the interim head coach. Robert Kraft is telling him, don't do anything to try to win these games.
But I think that does
that, – that'd be stupid. That'd be stupid.
No, I agree with that. I no longer want – if when we were 2-2, 2-3, 2-4, when the season is fucking salvageable – and that gives – I think that is more of a time to fire Bill than now is. You've already fucking made your bed. You got to fucking lay in it, bro. It's like, hopefully you can get two or three more wins so he can go on to his next team and fucking break the record and retire when he wants to so he can get the fuck out of my face. Because I'm so fucking done with it. It's team. How many times have I said it? Did I say it 23 years yet? Team. 22 years in a row. And then as soon as fucking Brady leaves and as soon as Bill needs their fucking record, it's all about Bill. It's so fucking dumb, dude. I don't have any like eloquent way to speak about it anymore because of like how like emotionally involved I've been with this team, and it's always been good. So like I've been like set up for like, oh, and it's like, oh, we're just going to win. We're just going to win. Every fucking time, the first 18 years. Yes, dude, you go down 14, you score one fucking touchdown. You score one touchdown, and you look at Tom Brady on the screen. You're like, you know what? You look at Bill with his little fucking golf pencil and his little fucking pizza pen. You're like, you know what, bro? They're fucked. They're not taking us seriously enough. Like, we're going to come back, and we're going to fucking win this game. Even down 28-3, as soon as they fucking scored that, they started kicking field goal. They missed the extra point, and the machinations still matched up. I was like, we still fucking got this. Now, it took a year and a half of Mac Jones for that feeling to go away. And now every time that the other team scores first, I know we're going to lose. It's been a hard and fast fall.
You know, I really want to see what Will Greer has. I've been saying this for like a month now. I want to see what he has. He had that performance in the preseason with Dallas. He had
a big game. Yeah.
He had a really big game. And he was a guy that was coming out of college that I think was linked with the Patriots in the draft. I don't remember when he was drafted, but it was one of those years, I think, post-Brady. I think it was 20 – might have been the Mac Jones draft, where he was one of those guys that was taken later. I can't remember what year he was drafted. If you can find out,
Levis Kojak. Was this year. Levis was this year.
I'm talking Will Greer. Greer. Oh, Greer.
Will Greer, Will Levis, whatever.
But I want to see, like, what's the arm at this point? Like, yo, go out there. He's been with the team for now 10 weeks, 11 weeks. They're coming off a bye week now. They're going into the bye week this week. Let's see if you got anything there. I know he's older. I want to say he was 28. I want to say he's 28. But let's see if there's anything there, like, that you can, like, maybe build towards next year. Like, see if you can find something. If I'm Bill, and I'm kind of like feeling the heat. Obviously, he's feeling the heat, and he might lose his job. I think that let me throw a hypothetical at you, Joe. If the Patriots start Will Greer the rest of the year, and they go, how many games I got left? Eight? Seven? Seven games left, and they go,
I need to do math.
5-2 with Will Greer as the starter. I personally think that's enough to save Bill's job and to end all the stuff and have some a little bit of optimism going into next year, regardless of Will Greer's the quarterback next year or not.
So they're 7-10?
Yeah, they finished 7-10.
And they win a game. Let's say
they beat Kansas City. They find a way to beat Kansas City because Bill is that defense has always had a way to.
Dude, if we go 5-2 and we don't score above 24 fucking points, I'm out. But you, the whole DNA, the whole thing has to change. You can't win games 10-6 anymore. You have to outscore the other team. So if they put Will
Thanks, Greer Madden.
Yeah, I know. I should be in the league. I know. The different headset, I'd be on the sideline. But you need to win games a different way. So if they're winning games by Will Greer managing the game, running for 200 yards and winning 14-7, fucking 13-6, I'm out on that. But if somehow Will Greer gets in and they're starting to win games 35-34, if they're winning games 31-28, if he's fucking taking them out of a two-score deficit, I think about keeping him. And the only reason would be is because then that would mean that there has been some philosophical change that couldn't happen with Mac Jones. If they're trying to make that philosophical change with Mac Jones, to be honest, it doesn't look like it. But I think in the back of their head, they know Mac's limitations. So they're trying not to get embarrassed, which I totally fucking agree. So I totally agree with that. Just like what happened with the Cowboys. They kind of exposed the kid and he got embarrassed. So I think they're kind of safeguarding against that with the way they're playing these games. They're trying to run the ball more, and obviously they're not effectively, but they're trying to keep the score down and they're trying to keep themselves in the game because they know that they don't have the horses. If they figure out that they do have the horses, if you put Greer in at quarterback, that's a different story. I still don't know about keeping Bill.
You know where I stand on it.
I know you're going to keep Bill regardless, dude, but I mean, you've got to take GM powers from him. You have to. But if you go 5-2 down the stretch with Will Greer and you're winning games and shootouts and like the team, the offense looks legitimately different, the team looks bought in, then we can talk. But if you're going 5-2 by letting up fucking 75 points in the last 7 games, like, I don't want kind of anything to do with that. I want the Patriots to be a modern NFL team. That's what I want.
I want that too. I do. And you're never going to get an argument from me about the GM stuff. If Bill doesn't want to accept a reduced role and to just be head coach and oversee defense, like, and work with his, even if he's working with his kids on the defense, but I want his mind on the defense. And they can bring in somebody other than Bill O'Brien, some new mind, or even if it's one of his guys that's kind of that modern, that has that new edge kind of vibe with him, and let the dude run the offense. Bill, stay the hell away. Trust me. Just trust me to do my job. I'm all in on that. That is my, in my opinion, a front office and that kind of setup with Bill as a head coach and him with his hands in the defense. That is a perfect scenario for me. And I think that's the perfect scenario for the Patriots going forward, because again, the devil, you know, versus the devil, you don't. Like, how many of these head coaches that people that are hired end up getting fired within 2 years because their teams just flop?
I mean, like, Bill probably gets fired in 01 if Mo Lewis doesn't decapitate Drew Bledsoe.
I don't know if it happens that fast. I don't
know
if it happened
5-11 the year before, and they were 0-2 on the verge of being 0-3.
I still don't think it happens that fast. But that's a problem with the league. Like, you can hire some upstart, you know, and if you don't get what you hope out of it, you're going to end up with a serious problem, and you're going to end up going through a coaching carousel, kind of the same way that you're going to end up going through the quarterback carousel. Why teams in the first round, you could be all hyped up for Drake May or was it Bo Nix or Caleb Williams, dude. Odds are, two of those three are going to underperform based on the expectations of being drafted where they're drafted.
Cool, do it again.
That's what it's going to be. It's a constant carousel. It's a carousel.
Cool, do it again. Keep doing it. Keep doing it until you find the next Tom Brady. Keep doing it. Keep doing it until you find Patrick Mahomes. Until you get the number one pick. Keep doing it. Keep doing it.
That could take a decade. I don't give a
fuck. It's been half a decade and we fucking suck, dog. Like, it's been half a decade of doing it this way. I'm done. 3 years? Dude, Tom Brady left and Tom Brady's last year was 2019. It's been 2021 to it. Yeah, it's been
2020, 2021. No, it's been
4 years. Okay, this is the fourth year.
Fourth year. This is the fourth year. That's still not half a decade. You need to check your math skills out, dude.
If you round up, it gets to five because we're halfway through.
You round down.
Fourth season. And then if you carry the one, I'm still right because they need to get rid of Bill. No, dude. But like, you make a good point. If you, the thing that I'm scared of is that Bill has already had a modified role. So like, the thing I'm scared of is if Bill already had a modified role and it's gone downhill even faster, then the problem goes farther than just removing Bill from the front office. I think you need to revamp the front office as well. So if the taking Bill away as the GM comes along with adding some new brain trust into the GM role, into the decision-making room, then I'm okay with that.
Yeah, because the guys that are in there now are his cronies. Matt Groh is the son of Al Groh, who was his buddy. He coached.
I don't
Al
want
Groh.
Anybody who think who Bill Belichick taught how to pick players to pick players. I think that's my thing.
That's fair. Bring back Ernie Adams. That guy could find him. Throughout the course of the dynasty, he was finding those guys.
Can we let him remote or something? Like, can we? I don't know.
How about Dante Scarnecchia? Bring him back too. Maybe he can fix the offensive
line. Dude, but these guys are like 100, bro. We need to find that. That's the thing. I think that's a big thing, dude. That's a big fucking thing. Have you noticed how far the in-game management has slipped since Ernie Adams has gone? His whole job was to sit up in the press box and be an advisor as to how to manage the game. You might want to go for two here. You might want to think about going for it. All right, we're in four down territory. And it's like, that takes a whole separate thing. So instead of the coaches needing to decide that and then pick the play or pick the scenario, you know what I mean? They already know, all right, we're thinking about going into four down territory here. This changes our entire offensive script for this drive. This changes our whole entire play calling scheme for this set of downs. So I think you need to find – I think this offseason, even though it's kind of crazy to think about, there's two things that you got to bolster. One is the coaching staff and the decision makers. You have to bolster. I don't know how you're going to do it. I don't have a fucking plan. I'm not here to have a fucking plan. I have a fucking podcast. I'm here to bitch. So Kraft, you're a titan of industry. John, Bob Kraft. You guys are titans of industry. You've done the right thing many times. Time over time, you've done the right thing. Do it again. Make sure Bill knows that he needs to acquiesce that he needs to change. And the second thing you need to do is you need to invest on the both offensive and defensive sides of the ball. That's how Philly did it, and that's how the Lions did it. They invested on both sides of the ball, and then they found their quarterback. So you need to it's not dead. The team this year is dead, but the future isn't dead. They're going to have a top five pick.
A lot of cap space.
They have a shitload of fucking cash space. They, even though we bitch about the, draft, there is a couple bright spots of young players on the roster. And I think that if you, there needs to be change, but I think you can find a happy medium between fire sale and standing pat. So there needs to be change made, and hopefully changing the quarterback and changing the dynamic of the quarterback and the coach is like enough to make that change. But I'm coming off the scorched earth shit a little bit, but it's still in there. I would still, a part of me would love being like, all right, everybody named Belichick is out. O'Brien's out. We're not hiring Mayo. We're not hiring Vrabel. We're going to get Houston's OC that's fucking popping off with CJ Stroud, and we're going to draft Caleb Williams with the number one overall pick, and we're just going to fucking go for it. We go 0-17 2 years in a row, fucks up. Who gives a fuck? We have another number one overall pick in our cream and a pick of the crop of the next head coaches. So I think that even though it's not the NBA, you still need to get bad enough to get good.
That's, I mean, you got to think the Patriots haven't picked, I think, ahead of what the pick was 15, the highest that they've picked in the last like decade.
Well, they traded up for Hightower. They traded up for Mayo.
They've traded up. I'm talking about their pick. Their pick.
Oh yeah. Their pick. I mean, they've traded up from the 20s into the top 12, yeah. But I don't think they've ever had a pick higher than 15. We're looking at a top five pick.
I think the highest pick that they've had in the last 20 years was a traded pick. And I think it was Jerod Mayo. And I want to say he was taken at like 8.
I think it was
8 or 9. And that was freaking 13, 14 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's been that long. Sorry, I just had a fuck up there. But yeah, I'm just going to say.
Threw my computer out the window.
I'm just going to say, like, in regards to Bill, and I'm going to say it right now. I want him here. But I want him here on the terms that we've just laid out. What I just laid out for the terms. I don't want the status quo. I don't want Billy O'Brien back. I mean, I'd be okay with him coming back. But again, I want him to have full control of his offense. I want him picking the
guy. And a new quarterback.
Obviously a new quarterback. But what I'm going to say, I'm talking coaching here. I'm talking the coaching. I want Bill back. Part of it is my bias. Part of it is my nostalgia. Part of me is I want him to finish here. Blah, yada, yada, yada. All that. I want him out of the GM role. I don't want him to have any hand in the drafting. No drafting. Get him out. I want him as my CEO type role of the head coach with his hands in the defense. His kid can stay. Mayo can stay. Coaches can stay. Fine. I want a new offensive coordinator, ideally, one that's versed in the modern game, picking his staff, picking his position coaches, having a significant amount of input with the front office in terms of who they're going to sign and who they're going to draft. I want the special teams coordinator, Cam McCord, fired. I've been calling for that for 2+ years now.
That dude sucks.
That dude sucks.
So bad, bro.
I wish they fired him and gave Joe Judge that position coach back. Because when he was here as a special teams coordinator, they had one of the best units in the league.
I know you didn't mind the call, but selling out on that goal line, goal line punt, dude. You don't have anybody, dude. You have to think of, dude. You're not gonna block the punt with 11 guys.
You're gonna hope,
dude. Just fucking catch the punt at the 40 and take the fucking easy 3 points, dude. All right. I guess there's two schools of thinking. You need to make a play to actually get a touchdown, but like you're cutting off.
Imagine if they had blocked it, though. We'd be having a completely different conversation if they actually blocked it.
They didn't.
I know they didn't.
It wasn't a high enough percentage play to make that dumb enough of a call.
They sold out for it. It's the first time we've seen them do it. They sold out. They tried to make a play. It didn't work. And the punt got a very, very, very favorable bounce for the Colts. Right? Got a very favorable roll. That doesn't always happen. So they sold out. They played the percentages, however you want to look at it. They sold out for it. I didn't have a problem with it. But that coordinator, dude, he's so bad. He's so bad. And you can blame Bill for the bad special teams, but like, I'll blame Bill for leaving that guy in that position, dude. He underqualified when it came, when he came in. It's been, dude, I hate that dude. That dude is so bad. I feel so bad for Matthew Slater having to play under that guy for his last season. I feel so bad for him. Dude deserved better. So, getting back to Bill, if he is not willing to accept any of those terms, I'm in your camp. It's time. Bye-bye. And if it is time, bye-bye, I want the fire sale on the coaching staff. I want the fire sale. I want everybody gone. I want the new guy in. Whoever the new head coach would decide to hire, I want him to pick everybody. I want none of these guys to say. Mayo can go. Obviously, Bill's kids go. Like, Troy Brown goes. As much as it sucks, like, he hasn't been a very good positional coach.
He's not as good of a coach as he is a player. It sucks.
It's too bad. And, like, I'm not going to sit here trash on the dude because he was an amazing player. I just don't think that he was qualified for the role. I just don't think he's lived up to what he needed to be. But, again, if Bill's not here, I want the front office and I want the coaching staff completely emptied. This is the time to completely start it over if you're going to get rid of the head coach. But that's not what I want.
I agree.
But
all right, I'm just I just looked up some since we talked about, we threw that free agency number in there. I think an easy position you can spend on and make a difference would be wide receiver. Dude, listen to this, bro. Listen to this free agent class. These are unrestricted free agents next year. Mike Evans, Michael Pittman Jr., Gabe Davis, Calvin Ridley, Marquise Brown, Kendrick Bourne. You could bring back T. Higgins, Curtis Samuel, OBJ, DJ Chark. Like, dude, I a couple of the others at the end I kind of threw in there to make.
Who are the first couple you listed there? Who are the first couple?
Mike Evans. Oh.
I want
Pittman Jr. bad. I'd pay $20 million.
He's probably my number one choice, dude. I've loved him since he was drafted.
Him or I would take him or Ridley. I think Ridley would be a good player in this offense.
You're gonna see a lot of those names though get re-signed before free agency, franchise tagged, all that jazz. So that list will shrink. But yes, I agree 100% with you with that. That's the position that they can hire. They can go out and they can spend money. Get one guy. I'm okay bringing Kendrick Bourne back if it's at a reduced number coming off the ACL.
Do you think the deal that they just gave Jonathan Taylor will have any effect on them trying to keep Michael Pittman?
Maybe.
They're going to have to look at their situation. They're going to have to pay Richard. Well, he's got the fifth-year option, so he's got 4 years. So they're going to have to pay him in 4 years. So that's kind of far out. But, oh, they got a couple defensive guys to play. They have that linebacker that just leads the league in tackles every year. They have
Emergence, too, of some of their other receivers. So it might give them pause. So Mike Evans would be an interesting one to bring in as a veteran. He's obviously older, but he's been very, very effective down in Tampa. And I think he's having a pretty good year this year with Baker Mayfield. So he's an interesting guy. I don't think that the Buccaneers
really. He's a good,
really
shitty quarterback wide receiver, too. Like, if you're a good. Yeah.
James Winston, like, Tom Brady, you know.
Well, I mean, dude, they won a Super Bowl with Tom Brady. I know. But, like, dude, this dude's having, like, fucking 10 straight 1,000-yard seasons, and you got fucking Jameis Winston thrown in there. You know, Mike Glennon and shit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I think Mike Evans, if you're not committing a bunch of guaranteed money to him, and you can kind of just get him on, like, a short, moderately priced deal, because I think he's a great shitty quarterback wide receiver.
Shy of 800 yards, 6 touchdowns.
Who?
Mike
Evans. He's having a really good year.
He's just shy of 800.
Already, we're what, 10 weeks into the season, so yeah, absolutely.
Dude, he has 730.
His average catch is 17 yards.
Dude, he's only played 9 games too. He has the most yards out of this free agent class, and he's played a game less than everybody.
Nope. So my last point I want to make about the Patriots before we decide to move this along to talking about the playoff picture in the NFL here. I'm sure a lot of people listening to us are probably sick of us bitching about the Patriots. Get used to it because it's going to continue on this podcast for the rest of the season until things get better. We're spoiled Patriots fans, so we are going to bitch. I know we give Bill a lot of the blame for lowballing these wide receivers and these free agent targets when, like, we'll use DeAndre Hopkins as an example this year. Obviously, they lowballed him. He went and signed with Tennessee. How much of the blame do you give to the owner not willing to give out the guaranteed money?
See, that was one of my bullet points. I'm glad you brought this up. I think that this all starts from the top. Like, you need to open up your checkbook, and that includes the coaching staff. You need to open up your checkbook and pay people who aren't being paid by other organizations fair market value, and you need to go and you need to real cash spend. I understand. We spend to the cap every year. Yeah, Bill, I don't give a fuck.
Cap is crap.
Just real cash spending. Give out some fucking money. I want to see some fucking spending. I know we did it. I know we did it a couple years ago. But, dude, we didn't – I think there was like five free agents that year and only three – in no, seven free agents that year and four of them are still here or something like that. Something crazy.
Born Henry, Judon. That might be it.
Born Henry and Judon are still here. And then it was like Aguilar, Jonnu Smith. Jalen Mills is still here. But still, on the offensive side of the ball, you're at a 50% hit rate on the fucking open market. You got to raise that up. I think that there's not a lot of tight end help on the open market next year. So you might have
to make
a trade. They might have to make it. If Hunter Henry doesn't want to resign, they might have to go make a trade. Because him, Gesicki, and Farrell Brown are all unrestricted free agents. So that's your entire room. Dude, Hunter Henry is only 27, which I didn't fucking know.
That's interesting. I'll be honest. I think if Bill gets fired, he's gonna leave, because Hunter Henry is like I don't know if you remember before he signed here, like him and Bill had.
He's 28. Like, 28, but still,
yeah, that's still young. That's still young.
But for a tight end, for sure, they produce up into their late 30s. I feel like, or mid 30s.
Yeah, and for me talking about this, like, there's definitely some dysfunction and some disagreement as to where the money is going. I think Robert Kraft is a fan first. He was a season ticket holder before he bought the team 30 years ago. I'm a little perplexed as to why he's not willing to give the guaranteed money. And I have a hard time thinking that he would let Bill lowball these receivers when his team needs help because of guaranteed money. Like, I'd love to know the inner workings of it and how their budget works and everything. But, like, obviously we know Bill is handsomely paid. And I wonder if Kraft is just like, here's your budget for the football operation, for coaches, for players, everything.
I've wondered that for a while, I think.
And if Bill's getting a handsome salary and he's, you know, they paid Josh McDaniels a lot of money to, you know, get him to give up that Indianapolis Colts job a few years back.
Mayo,
they paid him a lot of money.
Enough exactly. to not take but, head coaching interviews.
And then you take the other side of it, when Patricia was here. And when Joe Judge is here, they're being paid by the Detroit Lions and the New York Giants, respectively. So they're getting paid nothing. They're pennies on the dollar for what they're, you know, what they're getting. So I'd love to know it, but I side with you. I think Kraft is mismanaging this completely. And I don't want to, I'm not trying to absolve Bill for the bad signings and the low bomb, because he has a hand in it. As the GM, you have the hand in it to make the decisions. But I wonder, and I'm very, very curious if we ever get the chance to find out the inner workings of it, how much of it falls on Kraft. I almost want to go 50-50. I almost want to go 50-50 on it right now.
I agree. Well, it's his team, dude. He owns the team, bro.
He could tell Bill to do whatever the hell he wants. And if Bill doesn't like it, he could screw. Exactly. So,
but anyways, well, that's I ain't done, bitch. I just think it's a thing like, wow. What?
That was aggressive.
Yeah. have you met me? Yeah.
Yes. Once.
but closing thoughts would be, I think it starts at the top. I think Kraft's a very, very smart businessman. I think in business, a lot comes with hedging. I think you hedge your bets in business. You try to make sure that you're not too leveraged in one position, to make sure you don't lose your shirt. It's a very common theme in the business world, but I don't think it works in sports in the same way it does in the business world. Mm-hmm. I think clean breaks and putting your foot in the ground and going in a direction with full force should be more of a priority than it is in the business world. I think being able to pivot and being able to do the right thing in the business world is obviously something that smaller companies, not large companies like you would consider the Patriots, can do. But I think that we're at a point now where Kraft's decisions and this offseason are going to have a massive bearing on the success of the team going forward.
Absolutely. And, you know, my final thought, Bob Kraft is in a little bit of a position that he hasn't been in 23 years. So
put himself there, though.
I won't disagree. There's definitely a situation where he's going to have to make a tough decision one way or the other. One way or the other with the head coach. They've been married for 23 years. And I'm a little nervous. And I want to hope that Jonathan has a say in this, because he's ultimately the next guy that's going to be the owner of the franchise. And I hope that he makes the correct decision for the team going forward. With that said, I think we can end the Patriots talk this week. You're going to get a lot of it with us for the next
Bob Kraft, 8 weeks. Come on the pod.
Oh, let's go, Robert. Let's go, Bobby. Get on the.
You can land the helicopter right on the roof of my apartment, brother.
Dude, you can crush my house. I don't care. You can do it. Get on this pod because I know you're good for it. I can sue you, and I know you're going to buy me a better house. let's move on. Let's move on to the rest of the league. We have a lot to talk about here. We're going to talk about the playoff picture now. So I'll just go down the quick breakdown here. The AFC currently, Chiefs are the number one seed at 7-2. Ravens 7-3. Jaguars 6-3. Dolphins are 6-3. That's your division leaders right there. The Steelers, the Browns.
Stellars.
And of course, the biggest surprise here, the Houston Texans in the 7 hole at 5-4.
Can you repeat to me what I said 3 episodes ago that you laughed at me? Can you repeat that to me, please?
I don't remember.
You should be wanting to be the Houston Texans. Thank you. Period. End of paragraph.
Did I really laugh at that?
Yeah, dude. You were like, I can't believe you were. I said the Patriots fans should be jealous of the Houston Texans, and you were like, no, like blah, blah, blah. But that's when they were kind of playing like ass.
I was wrong. I'll be the first to admit right here, I was wrong.
You were right about the Lions, though. You'll get there.
Yeah, I'll get there. I love what the Texans are doing. We'll get into that in a minute. The teams that are on the outside looking in currently, a couple of surprises here. One of them I'm very happy about. The Cincinnati Bengals are 5-4 on the outside looking in. That's a surprise for me. Obviously, maybe a little bit not because of how their slow start. I think they're going to get their shit together and get in there. Maybe into a wild card. I don't know if they're going to have enough to catch the division, but that's there. The Colts are 5-5. And you fuckers up in Buffalo are 5-5 on the outside looking in. You guys suck. The NFC side of things.
I'm gonna touch on that game real quick.
I'm gonna give the whole picture, and then we'll go touch on it. The NFC Eagles are 8-1, a team that has found a way to win games, but hasn't always looked the same as last year. But they're 8-1, so you can't really knock them. My Detroit Lions are 7-2 in the 2 seed. Let's go, Dan Campbell. 49ers 6-3, another team that I'm in on here. The Saints are 5-5, that dumpster fire division down there. The Seahawks are 6-3, Cowboys 6-3, Vikings 6-4 in the 7 hole. The outside looking in, there's a little bit less intrigue here, but you got the Bucks, the Commanders, and the Falcons all have 4 wins.
Yeah, there's no way I was putting the fucking Bears in there.
I'm not even going to go down the rest of that list you laid out there, yeah, because I think that's all dumpster. I mean, the AFC, you can talk about the Raiders at 5-5. Maybe they make a run with their interim head coach, Antonio Pierce, here. And then you got the Chargers and the Jets at 4-5 each. But let's.
I mean, I got more confidence in the Jets making the playoffs than they do in a lot of those teams in front of them, like the Raiders, the Chargers, the Colts.
The Bills.
It's not getting nuts, dude.
Oh, I'm going to get nuts.
They still have the best quarterback.
Wait till we get to our picks. Wait till we get to our picks, man.
No, that Bills game. That Bills game should shake your confidence as a Bills fan. It should.
Absolutely. This game was occurring while we were all having fun at the gambling spot on Monday night. That was one of the best finishes I've seen. I died laughing. There was a guy sitting at the bar at the casino when this kick happened, because you guys had already left. There was a guy sitting there. We watched the first kick, and I'm like, oh, he missed it. And this guy's freaking out that he missed it. And then you see the flag come out, and you see the ref do the whole.
Oh, too many men on the field.
12 men on the field on the defense. And, dude, the kicker fucking drilled the next kick. He drilled it. Drilled it right down the middle. The best part about this whole thing, it happened in Buffalo. It happened up in Orchard Park for all those trash bag Buffalo Bill fans that like to jump through tables. dude, best result. Josh Allen is an absolute turnover machine. Ken Dorsey, the offensive coordinator, was fired on Monday. Dude, he fell on the sword for Josh Allen. He fell on the sword for Josh Allen. Josh Allen is a turnover machine over the last 3 years. Yeah, he's had a couple of, like, you want to call them MVP-type performances. I don't think he was ever really, like, there to be MVP. He might have been in, like, a top three role based on the voting, but in my eyes, my smart, gifted, educated football mind was never there. I hate that dude. He may be a good guy, but I hate him as a football player. I feel that way about a lot of players. But anytime I watch, dude, I'm at the point now where, like, yeah, I'm rooting for my Detroit Lions. We'll get to that in a minute. I don't care who wins the Super Bowl as long as it's not the Buffalo Bills, man. I don't care. It could be KC repeating. And as much as it pains me to say that, because I don't want to see that, I'd take that over watching Buffalo win one, because their fans, man, piss me off. Joe, what were your thoughts about that?
I've never been a huge believer in Buffalo. Obviously, rooted in
that's my, why we're boys. That's why we're boys.
Yeah. It's obviously rooted in my, like, in my New England fandom. But I mean, they ran the ball for like almost 200 yards, but like 25% of that came on one play. Like Latavius Murray, like, drops the ball, picks it back up again, runs for a touchdown. I didn't wait to watch this game. I had to kind of like piece it together through highlights in the and a little bit of all 22. But it's almost like Josh Allen feels like he has to gain 25 yards on every play. Like, it's almost like he's playing in the CFL.
Where Hero ball.
Yeah, it's like it's three downs to get 20 yards. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Some of the decisions he makes, and that's why I think that, like, he's the type of person that needs that Daboll, like, alpha attitude in the room. Like, I low-key think that Bill O'Brien from the Patriots would be a good fit with Josh Allen, because it's I don't want to call it an alpha in the room, because I fucking hate that term. But, like, you need
to call him out.
Yeah, exactly. You need a strong personality that's going to hold him accountable. And I think Daboll was that exact person. I don't think he has the personality to be a head coach, just based on the, like I said it last week, of the unbelievable sound bites and video clips that we get out of Daboll every week. But to truth be told, he kept Josh in check. And I think that he's going unchecked right now. And I think that you got your wide receiver's brother tweeting. You got OCs being fired. You guys are 500, more than halfway through the season. You guys are on the outside looking in.
And lost to a couple of bad teams, too.
You lost to the fucking Patriots.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome, dude. I wish we went 1-16 and we just, or I wish we went, two. I wish we two. Went, no, I wish we went 4-13 and went 2-0 against the Jets and the Bills. That's what I honestly hope. That's yeah. what I wish happened, but I never get what I want. So that's neither here nor there.
Still
but
alive.
Dude. He is. I'm trying to look for him on the. I just seen him. He's fourth in the NFL in passing yards, and he has 11 interceptions. Nobody in the top 18 has more than 10. The next person with 10 on this list is Mac Jones, 19th in passing yards, has 10 interceptions. Jordan Love, 20th in passing yards, has 10 interceptions, dude. I don't know. It's jarring to look at him in his turnovers and like how far he's come since like the last couple seasons where he's been an MVP candidate. He's tough to put an actual like definitive like description on because of like how athletically gifted he is and how special he is as an athlete, but sometimes the athlete just doesn't match up with the brain, dude. Sometimes that's just how it is. And then you get other people like Tom Brady, who runs a 5.940 and can win 7 Super Bowls. It's crazy how hard the quarterback position is.
Absolutely. And I want to make this point. Josh Allen was really nothing until Stephon Diggs showed up in Buffalo. He had his number one target, and that's when the vaunted wannabe dynasty in Buffalo started, you know, where they were winning divisions and going deep in the playoffs and all that. And I think that marriage is about to come to an end after this season. I know we talked about it a little bit before we got on recording here, but Stephon Diggs clearly is not happy in Buffalo. His brother, Trayvon, down in Dallas, texting, you know, putting on a tweet saying that he's got to get out of there. Stephon's got to get out of there. I think the Instagram post that we saw, the story might have been a fake, but like if it is real, I haven't been able to verify it, but if it is real, like he's saying, like, I gotta get out of here, you know, it sucks, you know. Healy had three receptions.
I thought you were talking about, wait, did you hear what other thing he said was, is when his conversation with Josh Allen on the bench?
Go.
So I can't remember, so I'm like hyperbolizing here, but like.
He said, can you throw me the ball? And he said, go put on a Broncos jersey.
That's what it said. I don't believe that that's real. I have a hard time believing that's real.
If it is, Josh Allen's either way too hyper self-aware of him throwing all the interceptions or the funniest fucking dude ever. Like, that's funny as fuck, dude.
Yeah.
Whoever made that up, too, good job. Yeah, it made me laugh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, if you made that up, come on the pod.
You exactly. Yeah, we'll get you out here. We want to talk to you.
Dolph Kleveman, come on the pod.
Oh, that dude is the one that tweeted it.
Oh, no, man. He was just. I saw him. No, whatever. It's all of these weird edit like JPA football, ML football, like all of them. Like they just bought Elon. They bought Elon's Twitter, so
yeah.
They get to just be an authoritative force on the internet. Anyway, the Bills kind of suck, bro.
Dude,
They're a very bad good team.
They're decimated by injuries on the defensive side. I don't want to rule that. I don't want to forget about that. They've lost a lot of their players. You know, like I think Matt Milano's out. I think Tre'Davious White is out again. That dude's always hurt. He's always hurt. Great corner, but he's always hurt. The Buffalo Bills have yet to really surround Josh Allen with a competent running game. And I think, I mean, I know that they had a good day in this game against Denver, but Denver's really a bad team. So I don't want to put stock in it. James Cook has shown flashes. They still only ran the ball 26 times. And if you take away, you know, Josh Allen's 22 times in a game, like that's for what they need and the balance that team needs. It's not enough. It's not enough for them to be successful. And, you know, Stephon Diggs obviously is the GOAT, the alpha receiver there. Only getting 3 receptions on 5 targets for 34 yards. Gabe Davis is the number 2 there. Only had 2 receptions. He had 6 targets, but only had 2 receptions. Yeah, he had some yards there. He had a 38-yard reception. Kind of skewed the numbers.
He's
but
such
like,
a boomer bust guy. He's such a boomer
yeah. Yeah, and, you know, they got the tight ends, too. Dalton Kincaid. I think Dawson Knox is also a guy that's injured. So another guy that's been effective with Josh Allen over the past few years, not there. But there's really no excuse for the way that they lost this game. And I'm going to touch on this now. If you want to talk about bad coaching, this game for Sean McDermott might have cost him his job. They just fired the OC to try to save face a little bit, I think. Ken Dorsey had his problems, but again, like I said, when we started talking about this, he fell on the sword for Josh Allen. Sean McDermott's calling the defense this year. Leslie Frazier took the year off for whatever reason. I forget. There might have been a family or personal reason there, but he's not there. That, you know, he was – the Bills' defenses over the past few years have been really good. This year, they're not. And right now, it's falling all on Sean McDermott. And I have been saying this for 4 years now. You guys didn't know me, but I've been saying this for 4 years. That dude is a fucking puppet. He's a puppet. That's all he is. He's riding the coattails of that offense with Brian Daboll and Josh Allen for the last few years, deep into the playoffs. But let's be real, when it has really come to shove for this team, they've had their problems. Obviously, we saw what happened Monday night. Inexcusable 12-man on the field. Obviously, it was a quick play where the Denver offense ran off the field. They brought out the kicking
unit. Dude, you want to talk about coaching? What a dumbass fucking approach. Dude, why did you kneel the ball on third down?
They didn't want to
spike it, and you have a minute to get your fucking team on the field.
I know.
But if they didn't do that, they wouldn't have won the game.
It worked. It worked.
Well, he might have not have missed the kick if you didn't have to rush him out there the first
time. Fair.
But he did miss did he miss an extra point or a short?
He missed an extra point. He missed an extra point.
So that dude's a fucking idiot anyway. So regardless, I don't know why. So he misses an extra point, and then you rush him onto the fucking field to win the game? That's dumb as hell. That's dumb as hell.
And you know what? It worked, though, because Denver clearly wasn't ready on the defensive special team side of the ball here, and they left the guy on the field. And that falls on the head coach. That falls on the defensive coordinator to, like, get his guys off the field. Somebody stayed out that shouldn't have stayed out. And lo and behold, he misses the kick. 5-yard penalty. And that's one – the good thing about that is that's one of those calls that happened. that you can't argue. There's no judgment. There's no judgment. You can't say it was a ticky-tack. 12 men on the field, that's easy. That's an easy penalty every time. And then the kicker drills it. Great fashion. But let's not forget the 13-second fail for John McDermott back in the playoffs against Kansas City. Massive fail to not kick that ball out of the – or kick that ball short. So Kansas City had to, you know, run the ball, and he'll climb off the clock. It's another coaching problem. Dude's a puppet. Dude needs to go. He's not a really good head coach. And
like I said, I hope they give Daboll a shot. I hope Daboll gets out of the Giants. I hope they give him a shot.
I'd be stunned if they fire him. And that would be a real problem if the Giants fire him. That's a topic for another day. But
that's a new thing. All right, let's get a little bit. I want to dig a little bit more into this playoff structure.
Go ahead. You go.
I think the Texans being in the Bengals and Bills being out is such a good thing for the league. I think that – I don't want to say for the league. Let's say for the parity aspect at least. Mm-hmm. I think rewarding the Texans with a playoff bid after they hit on their quarterback and they kind of like build it the right way. I mean, dude, all of their good players are drafted. They don't have a single free agent that's drafted. All their wide receivers – who do they have? They have one older wide receiver. His name is escaping me right now. What is his name? He was undrafted. He played shitty in college. He played for the Cowboys. And then now he's on.
Dude,
this would be great if the producer could just look up the roster real quick. Anyway, but they have like Tank Dell, Nico Collins. They have Damian Pierce, CJ Stroud. Dude, their whole entire team is drafted.
Dalton Schultz, tight end.
No, he's a wide receiver, bro. He played for Dallas.
Now he's Dalton Schultz.
Yeah, he's a wide receiver though. You missed that.
Okay, keep going. I'll find.
Yeah, I'm dumb as hell. But I just feel like the Texans have done it the right way. I really hope they get fucking rewarded. I hope they get rewarded with a playoff bid. I think they fucking deserve it. And I think that, like I said before, I wish that the Patriots were the Houston Texans right now. They did it right. I wish that
Noah Brown.
There we go. Undrafted. I think he was undrafted or seventh round pick out of college. Was shitty as fuck in college. Was shitty as fuck with the Cowboys, and then finally got a shot with the Texans here. He had 153 yards 2 weeks ago and 172 yards last week on 6 and 8 targets. Like, this dude's pretty fucking good. But yeah, I think the Texans are doing it the right way. I really hope they get rewarded with a bid to the playoffs. I think a team that's in the same vein as that on the other side is the Lions. I want the Lions to win the fucking Super Bowl.
Me too.
I want them to roll that old bitch Ford out onto the field with the fucking Super Bowl trophy. I want her to look like Sister Jean with the fucking trophy in her hands, dude. Like, I want Dan Campbell to take a bite out of Roger Goodell's kneecap
Super Bowl winning platform,
dude. Like, I want to see crazy shit go down. Like, a Texans-Lions Super Bowl would have the worst ratings ever, but I would be naked, covered in Crisco on my couch, dude.
I said it last night at my hockey game. I want the Texans and I want the Lions in the Super Bowl because I will literally watch that game and not give a rat's ass who wins because I'm going to be happy. There's going to be a great story no matter who wins that game. 100% with you.
I also want to pivot off that real quick, and I want to give a shout-out to a couple teams. I want to give a shout-out to the Ravens and the Chiefs. I don't like you guys. I don't like you at all. I love Lamar Jackson. I love Patrick Mahomes. But the way that they've been able to sustain success better than other teams with really good quarterbacks. I mean, Lamar's really good. He's not the best quarterback in the league. He's a generational athlete. He's not a generational quarterback. He's a very, very good quarterback. Patrick Mahomes is obviously a fucking unicorn. But I've seen unicorns like Aaron Rodgers not have the success that Patrick Mahomes has. And I think it's a testament to Andy Reid knowing exactly what he's good at, like coaching offense and calling plays, and knowing exactly what he's not good at, coaching defense and picking players. And I think it's a really good marriage of people trying to make it work. I think Patrick Mahomes, didn't he restructure his contract to give more cap space back? Like, he's actively trying to help the team. You have Andy Reid, who's, I think, coming into his own as a coach. I know he's old and it's kind of a weird thing to say, but I think these last 5 years, like, some of the shit that used to get on him for with the Eagles, It was his clock management, was his game management. And I think that's been cleaned up a little bit. Does he have a little help in the booth like the Patriots did for all of those years with Ernie Adams? Maybe. But I think that throwing them a bone right now, they're winning games in different ways. Like I said last week, they're winning games on defense now. I think Patrick Mahomes has realized a little bit that all he has to do is make the right play every time instead of trying to make a big play every time. And that's kind of how the team's set up right now. And with the Ravens, I know they got off to a little bit of a shitty start, but I think that them leading into – dude, they draft a running back every year that goes off for 150 yards in a fucking game. Mm-hmm. Every fucking year, dude. Yep. Every year. I hope this Mitchell kid stays healthy, but like – it's another thing, like, dude, they did it the right way, dude. All of them, besides OBJ, dude, all of their good players are drafted, dude. Their whole team, and like I said before, like the Lions and like the I forget the other team, but like the Lions and the Eagles, with the both sides of the ball thing, like you need a build from the inside out. And I think that's exactly what Baltimore has done. They're like, dude, we have a run heavy quarterback. We need to keep the score down, which means we need to have a good pass rush and we need to have a good running game. And they have an excellent offensive and defensive line. And I think it's so disheartening as a Patriots fan and having a rookie quarterback that no matter what you think about him, there's no argument to be made that he's put in a position to succeed his second and third year in the league. There's no argument to be made there. So I think that seeing these teams be creative and form their teams to their situation. It's like, dude, the Chiefs could have went out this year and got OBJ and got DeAndre Hopkins and went about it that way. But then in their heart of hearts, they probably looked at it. They're like, dude, we've had a couple good drafts on defense the last couple of years. Let's get some competent pass catchers in the draft. Let's stock the backfield with Mahomes. They have a bunch of pass catching backs. They have a couple backs that can get you 2-3 yards in a cloud of dust. Yeah, not a lot that might break you a home run, but just enough to get it done. And then they have a good competent defense where they know that they don't have to score 40 every day. Like that's a conscious decision by that team to pick a direction and go with it. And that's the thing, is they picked a direction and went with it. They went all in on this direction. They bolstered their defense. They made sure Mahomes had young pass catchers that he could coach up. They made sure that Travis Kelce was paid and stayed there after they got rid of Tyreek Hill. They invested at the running back position with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Isaiah Pacheco. They invested at the wide receiver position with multiple wide receiver picks over the last couple of years. They might not all hit, but they see that they have some kind of strategy that they're trying to execute. It's not just a who's the best deal, and it doesn't matter if it fits or not.
Sure, sure. So real quick, before we move on to our picks for this week, my question for you, out of the 14 teams that are in the playoff picture as of today, which team outside looking in do you think has the best shot to get in? And obviously that will correspond with which team that is going to miss. And I'm going to start here. I believe that the Cincinnati Bengals will crawl their way back into the playoff picture as a wild card. And I have the Cleveland Browns falling out of the AFC wild card picture just based on the injuries and based on what I think about the Cincinnati Bengals as a whole as a team. Joe, what do you think?
I couldn't agree more. I'm glad I started thinking AFC and NFC instead of just picking that one, because that's the easy one that comes to your mind, right? They lose to Sean Watson. I think that was today that fucking came out, right?
Yeah, it did. Yep.
Today. Cool. Yesterday, as we're releasing the day after. I think as much as it fucking sucks to say, and I want to pick the Seahawks wicked bad, but I don't know if the Vikings can sustain this. Once you kind of have a quarterback's number and the scheme isn't too deep because he just got there, it's going to be a little tough. And the team that I like coming out of there, dude, I fucking said this at the beginning of the season as a dark horse. I don't like the Bucks, Commanders, Falcons, or Packers. I think the Rams got a shot, bro. I think the Rams got a shot.
Bold.
I don't give a fuck, dude. I don't give a fuck. I think Goff is hurt. They're like cycling through quarterbacks.
McVay's Stafford's hurt.
Stafford's hurt. McVay's pants are getting a little tighter. But I don't know. Dude, they're three games out of a spot right now. There's fucking seven games left. If I had to give another team that has like a way better shot, obviously the Bucs are the eighth seed. I think Baker Mayfield has moxie in him. I think that offense has a lot of talent. So I don't know if they can keep marinating that offense and marinating that system in Baker Mayfield's sauce to kind of like push them over the top. But yeah, I I think the Vikings are a clear one there. It's just tough. It's just like the Browns. It's tough losing your quarterback. I know that they've – I think they've won two in a row with Josh Dobbs. But it seems – it feels to me as if that could be something that comes back crashing down to earth very quickly. So let's move into our picks here. This is the Joe segment where he takes the lead. So everybody bear with me. Put your car in park. Put your seatbelt on even though you're not moving because it's about to get weird. So after this, so this last week, we had a very good week. Burge went 2-1. He had Atlanta -1, which is his only loss. Tampa Bay -1, which was a win. And then his lock was San Francisco -3. Obviously, that hit as well. I had a really good week. Second time going 3-0, 2 out of 3 weeks. I had Carolina +4, which I thought was a loss for the longest time because I had it marked down wrong. And then halfway through the day, I freaked the fuck out, which was nice. There is nothing better than thinking you lost a bet and then going onto your gambling app and seeing money in your bankroll. That gets the Crisco out of the can for me. Pittsburgh -3. I don't know what it is about Pittsburgh. I love betting on that fucking team, even if it's against them. And then Detroit was my lock -2.5. That was a win. What a fucking crazy end to that game. Joe Staley. What a fucking idiot that guy is. Yeah, that guy's a fucking idiot. And then Kojak picks. Oh, Kojak didn't have a pick last week.
So shame.
So we ended up going 5-1. That puts us at 21-15-1 for the season. We are 8-3 on our locks, almost a 80% clip on our locks. Fading's fun, but slamming's even better. I'll just roll right into my picks for this week. We spent this whole podcast doing tricks on the Houston Texans penis. We were doing tricks on it. I was doing tricks on it. I'm going to fade them this week. Give me Arizona +5 in Houston. Houston is 0-4 in the last four games they've been favored. That's going back a little bit because how fucking bad they are. But they're 0-4 in the last four games they've been favored. Another team that I'm picking to fade the other team is Minnesota +2.5. I just talked a bunch of shit about Minnesota saying they're going to fall out of the fucking playoffs. But now I'm going to hedge that take with taking them this week. So I think they can lose this game outright and still win. I think that the team is playing hard for Josh Dobbs. So I feel like that gets you close in this game. I think that if you took the quarterbacks out of this, I think Minnesota would be favored on neutral site. I think Russell Wilson's play in the last couple of weeks is inflating this line. So give me Minnesota +2.5 in Denver. Hard place to play, I know. And then my lock of the week. I don't love this pick. This is one of those times where you kind of look up everything to like persuade you away from picking the pick. And every time you look up something, you're like, oh, fuck, that actually gives more credence to the pick I hate. So my lock of the week is going to be KC -2.5 with Philly coming to town. And I looked up a bunch of stats about former Super Bowl rematches. And I got a 3-2 number. We went a little farther. Shout out StatMuse. You guys were wrong about a couple Tatum stats recently, Jason Tatum stats, but this one you nailed. So Super Bowl winners are 3-2 against Super Bowl losers the following year. So if you're following me, that means that the Super Bowl rematch happens the next year. So Philly's playing KC, and the Super Bowl winner is 3-2 in those matchups. But if they play after week 9, the Super Bowl winner is 3-0. That's enough of a sample size to get me fully invested in the Chiefs -2.5 this week. Burge, what do you got for me?
I'll preface this by saying that we had two picks that were going to be the same before we got on here, and we might have had a little differing opinion. So we'll see how it all plays out when Sunday, Monday rolls around. That's going to be a great Monday Night Football game between the Chiefs and the Eagles. I'm looking forward to that one. But I had a tough time this week making my picks too. There were a couple of numbers that were I was a little about.
There's a lot of really big numbers on the board.
Big like
a
numbers.
9.5, 10, 10.5.
Yeah. And you know, just to kind of tout some before I get into my picks here, you got Vegas getting 13.5. You know, in Miami, you got Carolina getting 10.5 against Dallas, and you got the Buccaneers.
You got the
getting
Pats
12.
Getting 9.5 against the bye.
Yeah. Buccaneers getting 12 in San Francisco. So some big numbers in this week. So I was trying to stay away from as much as I could, but at the end of the day, I ended up going with some of the big ones. So my first pick, screw you, Buffalo. I think that your team sucks. I think you're in a lot of chaos up there in Orchard Park. I'm taking the Jets +7, plus the points here. The Jets have found ways to win games this year. That
I will be betting Jets money line, just so everybody knows. Shout out Charlo Van Hill. How's Austin, Texas? How you doing? I am betting.
Let's go.
Slamming the Jets money line, dude.
Let's go.
I think the Jets are going to win this fucking game. They always play Buffalo hard. I wanted to take this. 7 is such a big number.
It scared me. Wow. I'll be honest. It scared me. But I'm rolling. Because
if they lose by 10, and it's like 27-17, but it's like a close game. That's going to be a bad beat or a tough loss. It's not a bad beat, but a tough loss.
Tough loss. Yep. But I'd feel confident in the Jets money line too. But we pick spreads here. We pick spreads here on the B2B podcast. So they're my first pick. I hate Buffalo. I think that team is in disarray. The offense is going to look different next week and might not be as functional as you'd hope. So give me the Jets +7. I'm riding my Detroit Lions. Chicago's a bad team this year. They're playing Chicago. I'm taking Detroit -8. I think that Detroit, they did play a close one against the Chargers, but they put up a ton of points. I don't have faith in the Justin Fields-led Chicago Bears to keep pace with them. And I'm going to continue my Detroit Lions love on this podcast. Detroit -8. My lock of the week, the team that finds a way to win when they have no business winning. And that is the Pittsburgh Steelers getting +1 on the road in Cleveland. Cleveland lost their quarterback for the year. I know that Cleveland has had a couple of good games with PJ Walker tossing the ball around, but not enough to scare me away. Pittsburgh finds a way to win these games no matter how bleak the outlook is. They find a way to win it. Plus the point, I'll take them all day. That's my lock of the week, Pittsburgh +1.
Kind of love that.
I hate the Steelers. Shout out my boy Pat Sage. Big Steelers fan. Talk a lot of crap to him, but I'm going with his boys this week.
We are a pro Pat Sage in an anti Pittsburgh Steeler podcast, just to get that straight.
Let's go. Let's go.
Go Jack, hit me.
Hey, how are you, pal? So Keaton Mitchell, running back for the
Ravens.
Thank you, pal. Had a
the Baltimore Ravens.
Had a huge game last game. I like the anytime touchdown at +210 for my boy over there.
Love it.
Oh, good number, dude. Good number. All they do is fucking run the ball.
And he's had a couple of really good games.
He's one of those guys, you look at him running, I'm like, damn, he's going fast. You know some of those guys? Like Tyreek Hill is one of those guys. Like the little you are and the faster you're going is like you watch Usain Bolt run, you're like, oh, that's a fast guy. He's running fast. He's the fastest dude in the world. He's the fastest dude in the world. But you're like, oh, he's a fast guy. He's running next to fast guys. Tyreek Hill, like his legs going nuts. Like I find that like way he just looks so fast. And same thing with Mitchell from the Ravens. He just looks so goddamn fast. Like Lamar doesn't look fast. He's super fast, but his like he's so smooth and so like graceful, and his legs are long as hell, and he's like taking one step every 5 yards, but I don't know. Mitchell just seems like he's just like running at 100 miles an hour every time I see him.
Love it. Love it. All right. I think we're at time here. Guys, got any final thoughts before we plug this thing up for the night? Plug it up.
No, I just I think we're in a good place as a football watching podcast. Though I think we got a really really big game this week. We got Philly and in KC. I think we have a lot of interesting storylines to talk about, including how big of a dumpster fire the Pats are. But as always, this has turned into a gambling podcast. We're white fucking hot, so you better be slamming the boys. I want to see bet slips. I want to see screenshotted bet slips in my mentions by Friday afternoon. Friday afternoon, I will be reimbursing nobody, but I want to see them bet slips.
Hell yeah. Kojak, any final thoughts?
Well, I'm good, brother.
Go Keaton Mitchell. Let's go.
dogs.
All right. So I'll just do that. We'll plug this thing up for the night. If you guys like hockey, check out the Two Pet Stack podcast that I'm on here at Two Pet Stack on the socials. Add it in there. Give us a follow if you like hockey. If you like going to games, go on SeatGeek. We got a code there. Number 2, pad, PAD, stack, STACK, pod. Get $20 off your first order. So be sure to check that out if you want to go to a football game. You want to go to a Patriots game, save $20 to see a bad team. Use that code.
Basically free.
Exactly. It should be. It should be. But as always, we are on the Twitter at BTP_podcast_. I'm on there at Burge the Goalie. Joe Scherr is at @_JuicyJew. And Kojak, notice I'm not using your full name here. Kojak.
He'll it use took it you in seven episodes.
Is on.
Hold
on,
let him use it in a second.
I'm going to use it right now.
Yeah.
Is at Alan13Brennan on Twitter. So thanks again here for tuning in. Listen to us bitch about Patriots. Yeah.
We almost went a full week without it. Oh my god.
It's gonna be a weekly thing, I think.
If you're still listening at this point, tweet me the number 47 and I'll cash app you $5.
Hell yeah, love it. Thanks again. We'll catch you guys next week. Have a good week, boys.
Thanks guys, love you.